So it was the second day of the actual Zemu Ridge campaign that you got a sense of, got organized. Did you continue the drive up to the ridge then? Or?
Well, then we consolidated our positions, and then we were taken back for a rest, and we had reinforcements come in. A relief of 10 came in and took our places. Mm-hmm. So we went back to rest camp, so-called. But our battalion came out of Vimy about a company strong instead of four companies strong. Oh.
Quite a few. Very heavy casualties in your sector. It was a very successful campaign, though, wasn't it?
Oh, Vimy Ridge? Oh, yes. Yes, it was very successful.
One military historian, I think it was Stacy, said that was the one campaign where you could tell, where they, by describing the battle, what actually took place, you'd also be describing the plans for the battle, that it was a real, almost clockwork in a sense.
Yes, of course I didn't know much about that, being a private. But I've read lots of stories about since Sturrock. It was one of the best planned battles of the whole war. So thorough.
Were you in that sector very long? Or?
No, I was wounded on the 1st of June.
This was after the...
Following Vimy.
Following Vimy Ridge. You were still holding that sector then?
Yes. It was outside the triangle, they said. There was a triangle there that was... held for quite a while before there was any further advance, because we had to consolidate and we couldn't follow through. I suppose that was it. Didn't follow through very far, within a few miles, 4 or 5 miles, I think that was. And we were holding a railway banks there and outside the city of Lens, and. We were just told when we went in, because still we were only a company strong, to hold that line. And I don't think the Germans had ever counterattacked anyhow, but a squad of Imperial Army gas men came along, and what we used to call the hit and run squad. Because they let off a few bombs, gas bombs, over our heads and onto the Germans beyond, and then they'd beat it. And then we'd take all the stuff that came back as retaliation. See, well, it was coming back pretty strong. That's when I got mine.
From what, shrapnel? And
just from a, what we used to call a minenwerfer. It was a huge... trench mortar, stood about 3 or 4 feet high, and it was set off from just behind their line, and you could see it going up and then start to come down. You had to wait till it started coming down to see where it was going to land so you could get the best cover. Or one of these had his name, my name, a number all over it. I started to run for the communication trench, which was close by there, and you could get in there and lie flat and throw the shrapnel go over you. But I didn't get there in time. A piece of shrapnel came and got me in. Mm-hmm.
So, where did you convalesce?
Well, that was in 6 weeks, and they weren't expecting me to pull through, because shrapnel had gone through my liver. It went in here and cut in here and took it out. Didn't expect me to live, but it was 6 weeks before they'd move me to France, and then from there went over to England and down to Herne Bay and Kent, convalesced there. Well, a hospital for 6 months.
Mm-hmm. There's no question of you going back to the front at all, and really because of the
experience. Oh no, I was invalid at home. Yeah. I got home in March of 1918 before the armistice. Mm-hmm.
Were you discharged right away?
Yeah.
I wonder after the war how you felt about it. Did you feel, for example, well, one of the slogans of the time was this was going to be the war to end all wars.
Yes. Make the world safe for democracy and all that sort of thing. Yeah. Well, you know, we had a nice long period there, almost 20 years, wasn't it, before the rumbling started again.
How did you feel like as a young man right after the war, 1918?
Oh, I just felt that, well, that's all over. I don't want anything to do with any more army again. And, I had to finish my university. I had 3 years to go. And I always had the idea I wanted to quit for law. That's what I did. I finished the university and an article as a student. I always felt that, well, we'd been a bit, and we'd just hoped that there wasn't going to be any more war.
Did you think about, like, international affairs or politics at the time, very much? League of Nations?
Well, yes, so the League of Nations was, we were all very glad to see the League of Nations going. As we were all glad to see the United Nations get going this time, but the League of Nations was just as much of a disappointment as this one was, or more. It finally went out of existence. It had no teeth at all.
I'd like to call upon your memory a little bit of the campus during the war years. Do you remember President Westbrook at all?
Oh, yeah.
What was your impression of him?
Oh, he's a very, very fine man. I was on the Students' Council when he came. I was only a freshman, but they didn't have much of a constitution then, and the freshmen were the largest body. So I thought they should have a representative on the Students' Council. So, I was asked to stand for election, and I was elected, and as such, I met with him quite a bit.
And,
he was a very fine man.
Mm-hmm. Were there any professors who had a particular influence on you?
Much more than another. We were at the university at the best of times because it was a small student body, an awfully good faculty. We were all friends. We knew each other. We'd go and discuss matters with them, that sort of thing. They can't do that these days. The professors just have time to get to it. As I say, those are the best times of the university for getting a real all-round education and speaking to men who, after all, weren't very much older than we were. Students, probably 7 or 8 years older than we were. Some Freddie Wood, for instance, he was. I went to join the Players Club, and he was one that I always feel awfully glad I knew, and we were still great personal friends. Well, so was Freddie Sowery, for instance, and well, most of them are gone now. Harry Logan's gone. He was very, very active, and Mac Eastman's gone. Oh, there's so many of them.
Yes. You were very active in drama yourself, and you liked it very much.
Yes, I liked it.
Do you know why COTC was abandoned right after the war, right after the armistice? It pretty well shut down. I wonder why.
Well, I think one reason would be that I knew I didn't want to go. Harry Lepson was very anxious to keep it going. He was a professor there at that time. But I think most of the boys, the returned men, just simply said, well, I don't want any more military training. I've had enough, and I don't think it's necessary. Mm-hmm. We've made the world safe for any further wars. Probably get that attitude a bit, but I don't think, I certainly felt that I didn't want to spend any more time in the Army.
Yes.
Military training. And there's one indication of it, that when they, I don't know whether you know those buildings there at the university, at the General Hospital now. There's one that was a TB wing for a long time, and that was our arts building. And the library was in there too. And the Harry Letson had his COTC group out on the campus there, just in front of this building. He was doing some drilling, and one of the lads, one of these students, his name was Jack Weld, he's still alive too. He got up on the roof of this building and got a hose and turned the hose on the COTC. He was, we had a student court at that time, and he was, Jack Weld was brought, I forget what the charge was against him, but he was, at any rate, he was fined $10. Mm-hmm. The rest of the students had a tag day and raised enough to pay his fine.
Really? So that indicates that in a way the students were really sympathetic.
Yeah, some of them, a good many of them, yes. Mm-hmm. Of course, we all treated it as a joke, except some of the members of the COTC.
Yes. In the UBC Alumni Chronicle, there's a statement that there is a lack of discipline in the Corps. This was probably 1918, I think. No funds, and there weren't any proper grounds for drill, and the equipment was poor, and things like that.
Well, that could be, yes. We had no place. If they did want to, I did want to build the core up again. I don't know where they were going to drill. They might have been able to use the old drill hall down here on Beatty Street or something like that. And I know before we went, when the COT was, before I went overseas, when I was with the COTC, we used to do our drilling in an old warehouse down on Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And this was in the bad weather. Getting our lectures in there. But there is no place around there that's available for cadet training.
Uh-huh. So that was possibly part of the reason why the Corps was disbanded too. The facilities were very poor.
Lack of interest, and the facilities weren't there, and there's no money. Mm-hmm. Couldn't persuade anybody that money should be spent on training the soldiers anymore.
I wonder if Dean Brock, who is, command of the D Company, was he trying to keep the Corps going too at the time?
I don't remember Brock being connected with the COTC so much. Mm-hmm. Except just when it was being formed to go overseas. So.
I see. In
1996.
What year did you graduate from UBC?
1921.
Mm-hmm. And did you practice, what did you graduate in?
Arts, got my B.A. Mm-hmm. And then my wife graduated in the same year. She went on, and then I went into law and articled to a lawyer here in Vancouver, and I was called to the bar in 1924.
You didn't have to go to law school then?
Well, there was a school, such as it was, it's called a law school. But all the lectures, you had to attend lectures. The lectures were given by members of the bar and the judges. And you had to pass examinations for 3 years, examinations that you had to pass, what they call the first intermediate and second intermediate and the final. And I went back to Osgoode Hall for my final year, and, just because of the special training that you get back there.
I see. And you when did you come back to Vancouver and resume practice?
Well, that was in 1924. See, I went to Osgoode 1922-23, and then came back here in 24 and called the bar, wrote my final exams, and called to the bar, and then I went up to the city hall right away. Mm-hmm. I didn't put up my own shingle at any time.
In no time, you did, I mean, all your career really, you were always associated with the city, weren't you?
Yes, as I used to say, I was the only one to ever appoint a judge. You only had one client during the whole of his career. That was the city of Vancouver.
You were elected to the Senate in 1924.
Yeah.
UBC Senate.
Yeah.
Can you tell me how that came about?
Well, I've always been interested. See, I was on the Students' Council for 3 different years. And president of the Alameda Society in my final year. I was always interested, and have been and still am very much interested in the university, its functions and administration and so on. And well, I think Sherwood Lett, he and I thought we'd time some students were on that Senate, and that was early graduates. So we both ran, we were both elected then at that time.
Mm-hmm.
We were the first students. We were the first student graduates to go on the Senate.
Well,
I can't say that for sure. Yeah.
How long were you on in the Senate?
36 years, I guess.
36 years?
1924 to 1960.
Mm-hmm. Did you participate in any way in the Great Trek?
No, I was back in Osgoode Hall at that time.
At that point.
Yeah.
How did you feel about the new campus coming about, though, the moving to Point Grey? Did you?
Oh, wonderful. We'd all been working for that, wondering when the day was coming on. We knew very well that by the time we graduated, it couldn't be done.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, that was always in the background of everybody's mind.
Yeah.
And we had a good group there in 1923 with Richards and Jack Klein and several others, and Blake Ilk, who really organized the thing and got it going.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember some other people this time? Do you remember Jeffrey Ritterhoff? He was a student on campus.
And yeah, and he was also in COTC.
Yes. You know, there was an affair in 1923, I know you weren't on campus at the time, regarding a visiting poet from England by the name of Sir Henry Newbolt. Do you have any recollection of that?
I remember the name. Did I just forget now? Why? Was there some particular matter?
Yes, something. He was a very strong jingoist. Very much, you know, England was the best nation at making war, and very sort of that tenor, very patriotic poetry. And students on campus at the time rather objected to his, you know, given the feelings at the time.
No, I don't remember. What year was that?
1923.
23?
It ended up that the UBC staff resigned after the issue. Well, something else. So, you're on the Senate. CUTC started to reform as early as, I think, 1927. Some students started to get together and decided they wanted to try and get the core going again. I think 1928 was when they...
Yes, it started again, it started up again in 1928. I think Harry Logan was very active in that.
Yeah. Would you like to give your version of how it was reorganized and why it was...
No, I wasn't there, you see.
Yes, but you were on the Senate, right?
Yes.
Well, there was quite a bit of opposition to it.
Oh, yes, there's some opposition from the families, students, and they thought it was going to be compulsory, certainly, but it wasn't going to be compulsory. And some of the parents would say, I didn't want my son to be brought up to be cannon fodder and that sort of thing anymore. There's no need for it, and that only... gives them a military mind and they wouldn't do anything to try and prevent a war. They would be glad of the opportunity of getting into one and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yes, I remember that rather faintly, but it didn't have much effect on them in the end. They got going.
Yeah. 1928 too wasn't really a time where there was a great deal of international tension. I wonder why
I don't
they would have wanted to start at that point.
I don't know. Too bad Harry Logan, he might have had something to say about that if he was still alive. Because
mm-hmm.
I think he was very active in its reformation.
Yes, he was the first commanding officer when it was reformed.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember how, for example, Dean Brock, what his attitude was?
No, I don't.
How about President Clink?
I don't think he had any objection. I think the main thing here again was finance. How were they to have get their uniforms? And they were able to, of course, have lots of room out there for drill and that sort of thing. They used the one of the buildings. Well, that was for lectures mostly, and that old building which is still standing.
The arts building.
The main arts building there, yes. And then below that there was a rifle range.
You were on the Senate at the time when it was being reformed, and one of the objections to CUTC being formed, reorganized on campus, was that this would mean that there would be an outside influence upon student affairs. In other words, the military would be able to have some influence in what went on campus. And the Senate was involved in this, I believe, because the Senate came up with sort of a compromise that, well, we will set up a military committee. Do you remember that? A committee that would kind of be composed of most of university people and the commanding officer to kind of act as a cushion between the military and the university. I wonder, because you were on the Senate at the time, and
yes, I was.
How you would have
I
thought.
I don't remember that.
What did you think of the Corps at the time? Were you in favor of it reforming?
Oh, yes, I was. If they had enough of the boys to really want it, then it was, it's good training, you know, for anybody. I think a lot of the young people in recent years would have been far better for a bit of military discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, maybe I'm a bit stretched on that myself. I like it, I like that type of discipline.
Yes.
I think it's necessary.
I wonder, in view of your own feelings after the war, though, like you were probably were fed up yourself with any more military environment. I guess you must have, to some extent, changed over the 1920s and started to feel that there was a place for it on campus.
Well, it might have been something like that, but I just, so far as I myself was concerned, I just felt that I didn't want to have any more military training. I had done all I wanted, and along that line, I had other things to do. And, but I certainly had no objection at all to the formation of another COTC. I thought it would be a good thing.
Did you do anything at the time, or even shortly thereafter, to further the cause of the COTC?
Well, except when the war started, the Second War started, Shun came and asked me if I'd come up and join the COTC there, because he wanted somebody who had experience in the last war who might be helpful.
Yes.
And I took a course and became a one pip wonder, along with several others, and so that's how I got back into the COTC. Mm-hmm. As one of the training officers.
I'd like to stay back in the period of about 1928 for the moment. Did you meet Colonel Logan at the time?
Yes.
He was the first commanding officer. What was your impression of him?
Well, I've known him as a personal friend for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And, I have great admiration and respect for him.
Mm-hmm.
Good man. He's done a great deal for the university.
He was succeeded by Colonel Letson, by Mr. Harry Letson, and about a year after he was the commanding officer, Colonel Letson took over. Do you remember how that came about?
No, I don't.
Was there a difference between Colonel Letson and Colonel Logan, though, as far as their... I know you weren't personally involved in the Corps at the time, but how would you imagine they would have a different approach to being commanding officer?
I don't know. I know both men very well. Harry Letson was on that, as I told you, on that cadet trip too,
uh-huh,
to Australia. I'm not sure how they would have matched up, as it were, as commanding officers of the COTC. Harry Logan is of more of a gentle nature than Harry Letson. Harry would be the boss man, and he'd let it be known in no uncertain terms. Harry's approach would be a bit milder.
Yes. Do you remember any of the other officers of the Corps in these formative years?
You mean during this last war? Or?
No, this would be, I'm still talking about like the pre-war years. First my name was Pollock, another my name was Stacy.
I wonder what Stacy that was. No.
Colonel Letson was not part of the university faculty though, was he?
Yes, he was.
He was faculty this
yes,
time.
He taught there in mechanical engineering.
Mechanical engineering.
Yeah.
Do you remember, as the Corps got underway, they're using the basement of the Arts Building, aren't they?
Yes.
Did you ever go down there yourself and look at their facilities?
No, not while the Cadet Corps was there as a cadet.